Taking a ride on the Freedom Train podcast series. I'm your host, Joseph Ford, and as always, ride with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. And remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PACS, Inc. That's P-A-C-T-S-I-N-C. And PACS, Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. That way you can see what's on the website, the codes of conduct, learn more about the organization, how to become a member, a donor, check out that sports package for all you little sports, little people out there, know what I'm talking about, up in the sports, know what I'm talking about, how to get more involved. And if you hover your mouse over that more tab, you see that drop down box with that learning center, and then bam, a whole nother drop down box with a whole bunch of resources for you to learn up in the learning center. So once again, once you visit that website at www.pactsinc.org, and while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. We can learn more about myself, Joseph Ward, Patrick Irvin, Enigma September, all of the shows we have. And you get caught up on some of the new things we got coming up on y'all up in your face. You know what I'm talking about? We get Freedom Train Network. We get it down on our website. Once again, it's at www.freedomtrainradio.com on your FM dial. Not really on the FM dial because it's internet, but tune into us anyway because we are here. And remember, you can find these podcasts on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Radio Public. What else, Pat? What else?
Everywhere.
iHeart, yeah, everywhere, iHeart, Your Heart, My Heart, Iron Heart, Dragon Heart, all that shit, ain't that right?
Yep.
Everywhere. Hey, man, Pat.
What up?
Get hyped, dog, get hyped.
Man, it's been a long day, I'm sleepy.
Me too, dog, it's all good, though.
It ain't really been a long day, I'm just sleepy.
Yeah, me too. But you know what, though? You know what, though, dog? You finna get hyped! There you go. I guess.
All right.
Yeah.
Man, what we got? What's up? How you been? How was the week?
Hey, man. I got snitched on by Tekashi.
What he told on you for?
I don't know. I don't really know. I ain't really think out the whole lot yet, but I just know I got snitched on by him, so that's all I know. I'm talking about.
All right. Did he catch you doing something you shouldn't have been doing?
Hold on. Okay. Hello?
Yeah?
Could you hear that?
A little bit.
Okay, so it was coming through my headphones. So that was some climate strike commercial on this web page. I couldn't figure out how to goddamn mute that motherfucker. So I edit that shit out. But ask me how I'm doing. I guess ask me how I'm doing. Ask my week going again. Yeah.
So how you doing? How was your week?
Man, my week was... The week was cool. Hold on, I'm thinking back over it too. Yeah, the week was cool, man. I ain't really do too much. Yeah, I really do a lot this week. I did some reading. I watched the Wu-Tang Saga. You watching the Wu-Tang Saga on Hulu?
Nah, I ain't got Hulu.
Oh, man, you missing the Wu-Tang Saga, man. Cause you know what they say about the Wu-Tang Clan, right?
Nah.
The Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to fuck with. You fell into that trap. Thank you.
I did. I walked.
There it is.
I
Nah.
What's the Hulu thing? What is it? Like a docuseries or something?
I guess not a docuseries. It's like a series. They got actors, different actors and stuff, but it's like a bio series, I guess you could say. So you got like Davies playing Method Man, such and such playing such and such. Have you ever watched that series? What's the name of it on Netflix? The Get Down on Netflix about the hip hop.
Yeah, I watched that.
Okay, so you know Shaolin Fantastic from that.
Mhm.
He playing Raekwon in the Wu Tang series, so that's one person you know.
Well, I don't know him, but I seen him.
But you know of him. You seen his face. Just imagine him with a whole bunch of gold teeth in his mouth. And you know what's up, son? You know what I'm saying? You gotta go down to murder these. You know what I'm saying? You know how Raekwon talk.
All right, so what we got today, man?
Hey, man, three topics, but, you know, it's finna go in. So they had a climate strike the other day. So let's talk about the climate strike, pros and cons of climate strikes. And have we set a bad example for the young people and they'll be out there wasting their damn time? So also, did you get a chance to watch the Revolt Summit with Killer Mike, T.I., and Candace Owens, and some of these other people?
No, I didn't, but I heard about it.
Okay, so, well, and it was part of the Revolt Summit, I should say, with Killer Mike and T.I. and Candace Owens and all of them. But I watched a good bit of it, as much as I could stomach. So we'll get into that and why I ain't watched the whole thing. And then, will millennials end racism? That's the question. Because it seemed like a lot of people think millennials will end racism. So I have an article up to talk about race in America, one you sent me. And I also got an article that I found. It's a 2015 article, but it's talking about millennials are just as racist as their parents. So we can kind of use these. If they're full of bullshit, we can call it out. If it ain't, we can kind of use it to kind of analyze. But the question is, will millennials end racism? And we are millennials ourselves.
Yeah, we're on the older end.
Yeah, according to one thing I saw, millennials started at 84, so that means since I'm in January, I was one of the first.
Yeah,
14 millennials.
Well, that's what I mean with the elder statesmen of the millennials.
But see, you ain't hear what I said though, dog. Since I'm January 14th, I'm the 14th millennial ever in the history of Earth.
Nah, not quite. I don't think that's how that works.
Hey, dog, you ain't finna take that away from me, dog.
You can't be the 14th millennial ever, and you was born 14 days into it. You know how many babies is born on each day?
Nope. It wasn't. It was just, that year was a special year.
One baby born a day in America.
You know. All right, so over this past week, I guess the weekend too, they had a climate strike. So I'm at the website now, climatestrike.net. And apparently it was a whole bunch of people in a number of cities across the world that gathered places and, you know, did the protests and things, striking for the climate. And you know us, I thought this was good for us to talk about because we're always talking about the environment and how we need to get our shit together and make sure we do right by the environment. But also I want to talk about it is, you know, like I said in the opening, have we set a bad example for our kids to keep doing things over and over and over that maybe don't work, like striking for the climate? Like, because the concept behind it is noble, but the actual action of it in the long run or in practicality, how does that, or what is that, or what is the end goal? So that's why I'm glad I'm on this website so we can see what the end goal of this is and see how we can help. So when you first hear the term climate strike, what goes through your mind? And have you seen anything about it?
Yeah, I've seen stuff about it. You know, I've been following the various different ways that kids have been getting involved in trying to create social and cultural change. And so I've been watching it unfold over the last few years. The first thing that came to my mind, being that I'm not like an expert on what all these people are doing, so I don't want to put that out there, but I've been following it for a while, and you know I have my own views. Students skipping school to protest is pointless. And that was my first thought. This is...
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because I scrolled through the website, and as soon as you get through the point list, I scroll down and I see skip school and organize the climate strike.
Yeah, it's pointless. I mean,
we recommend.
Go ahead.
Now, I was just saying, reading it was like, we recommend all climate strike events to be peaceful. For my ideas on strike events, click here. So,
and it's just deal, different. Right? When you strike something, like when employees and workers and things go on strike, they're refusing to work with the belief, with the hope that they will cost this business so much capital, both economic, social, and political,
right,
and production capital.
Your demands get met.
Right. You'll force change. When students
right.
skip school, you're not stopping anything. Teachers are still there. They're still getting paid. The government continues to function. The only thing you do is miss a day of school. Like, it hurts you more than it hurts the system.
Well, yeah, because it's like, when I saw it on Twitter, and it was impressive, the number of people that was able to be organized and all this. But, you know, we've seen this with humanity before. We know deep down inside humans, it's something inside of humans that make at least the good ones be like, fuck it, let's make sure we do something good. But when I saw this on Twitter, like the first thing I saw, because I've been using my Twitter a lot more, so I'm trying to be cool. But the first thing I saw was Tariq Nasheed was showing a video of two black boys in Seattle at the climate strike who the police basically barreled through a whole bunch of white kids to get to these two black kids to arrest them. So that's the first thing I saw about it. So that made me look at some more stuff. And then I just saw the number of people who were organized around these different cities around the world to go on strike for the climate. And I was thinking, I love the idea, but that shit sound like it ain't gonna really do nothing real at the end of the day.
No, I mean, go ahead.
I mean, because it's like, if the end result is, let me go back, skip school, organize climate strike, but our demands a sustainable world for everyone. So, I mean, we all want a sustainable world, but it's going to take us taking charge. And maybe the strike is a spark, but if you only just strike and then nothing else changes, then you're full of shit. You know what I'm saying? Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, of course we know the strike itself ain't going to do nothing. But also, let's say the strike was a... I'm just being hypothetical. Let's say the strike is a spark to kick something off bigger and better. Let's just say that. Maybe.
Here's my issue with that. A lot of these students, and I can say this from a bit of experience from talking to student activists that have grown up to become real activists, because we forget that students have been student activists for a very long time. It's not like that just started 5-10 years ago. So when there were school shootings back in the 80s and the 90s, there were students that tried to organize school strikes in order to raise awareness for that sort of thing. And it's documented, so you can look it up. But what ends up happening from what I've experienced and the people I've talked to is that they end up getting locked into this idea that they have to protest, they have to strike, and they have to make a list of demands in order to create change. And we know, those of us that have been doing this for a while, know that that's a piece of it, but that's not enough to create real change.
It's a component that can be used if you have all your other components in place.
So
it could be outside pressure.
But when you compound all of this student activation, all of this youth activation with the other movements that are prevalent among young people, which is that the government doesn't care, voting is a waste of time, this, that, and the third, you essentially have a movement that's gaining a bunch of popularity inside of a culture that it has effectively already neutralized their ability to create change because they're politically inactive. It's like on my show, I talked about the documentary The Great Hack. It detailed the Mueller report, it was things in the Mueller report, but it detailed Cambridge Analytica and how they use digital media and social media to influence global elections regarding a bunch of different movements. And one of the things I like to harp on with that was the Do So movement. So in the Caribbean, I believe it was Trinidad, but it might have been somewhere else. I might be getting confused. But in one of those countries, there was two politicians running, an Indian-backed politician and a black or Afro-black politician. And Cambridge Analytica was hired to get involved to support the Indian-based politician. So they created this movement called the Do So movement. It was a cool movement. They had a lot of local artists make songs and do lectures and make it real cool. Graffiti was spray painted everywhere. They got social media involved, and they got all of the youth hyped up about Do So. And what Do So meant was Do So, don't vote. Be cool. Do So, don't vote. They knew that the Afros would not vote. But they knew that the Indian kids would participate in the movement. They would be excited about it. They would do all this. But then they would go vote because at the end of the day, they're going to do what their parents tell them to, and their parents told them to go vote. And so the swing on that, they created a 40% swing. And the Indian people won the elections because the Afro people didn't vote and the Indian people did vote. So what I'm saying is there's this climate in America, though, where we have that same thing going on. Youth don't vote. They don't participate politically. They don't participate economically. They barely participate socially. So the only forms of participation you get from them are minimal social participation and a little bit of cultural excitement. That's not enough to create systemic change. It's not.
Easily
riled up.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's, you know, I'm just asking a question, trying to be John Stockton and set up the alley-oop. You know what I'm saying? But I'm looking at, as you're talking about, I'm still going through the website and looking at things, and it's talking about skipping school, but also suggest actions and things like give presentations, learn about climate issues, join Skype conferences, install solar panels in your school, perform arts. And so different things. So my question for all of us is, how do we get these corporations to give a fuck and be willing to lose money to clean up the environment?
I mean,
because that's the big question, man. That's the big question, right?
I mean, the corporations and government officials, but even the people themselves. Like, here's the deal, right? Installing solar panels in your school. A student that goes to school, makes good grades, could potentially do that. A student that's skipping class every week ain't going to have, and let's be real, this is skipping. Now, I know I'm making an extreme example, but why can't they do all of those same things? They can install solar panels. They can give presentations.
Yeah, they don't have to skip school.
Conversations. Like, they don't have to skip school to do that.
That's like, I want to stop obesity, so we're gonna protest McDonald's. Like, McDonald's ain't like the main culprit when it comes to obesity. So, going on strike from school is kind of pointless. It is pointless. It is pointless because
it's very pointless. There's no kind of,
you know, I mean, you can get your demands met within the school or within the whatever structure without like walking out of school. Because like I said, I mean, it's like trying to fight obesity but just striking McDonald's and still all the other shit still going on.
Why not try to arrange field trips to political offices? Why not try to arrange field trips to corporate offices? Why not try to arrange field trips to places where you can actually meet the people that have the power to create the changes that you want to create, and you can do it during school time? That way you're not creating all these secondary issues which are coming, where people are now fighting because these kids are getting unexcused absences. And you get too many of those, you get them.
Well, good for them. Like, I just focused in, and they have suggested, of their suggested actions, their last suggested action is meet politicians who will take some important decisions for our future and raise concerns, your concerns to them. So, like, that's a real action right there. That's a real action.
But you don't have to be able to do that.
Right. But, you know, they got organize a peace march, a tree plantation. Like planting a mass tree planting, that's a real action. Like, I like that.
That is a real action. Matter of fact, I think it was Nigeria, or I think it was actually Ethiopia, a couple months ago, set the world record for most tree plantings.
Yeah. One Gari Matai did a lot of tree planting herself as an environmentalist. One of my favorite people to learn about, on my journey.
The thing is, you don't have to skip school to do any of that.
No, you don't.
You shouldn't skip school. But
yeah, I mean,
the bigger danger here is that these kids are not being taught how to be effective activists, and nobody's pushing them to really think about what they're doing. Like, so now you got a bunch of kids who are basically just going out screaming and making a bunch of noise, assuming that nobody knows shit and trying to raise awareness. No, everybody knows about climate change. Motherfuckers just don't care. So you're not changing that by going on a march. You change that by actually doing things that shift the culture. But even to that, how many of these little kids out here are walking around with the brand new iPhone? Supporting jobs and all
that. Yeah.
Steve
Jobs
didn't even believe in philanthropy.
Well, that's the irony in all of this, and the miseducation and the ignorance and a lot of this that's going on, because like you said, the technology that we're depending on to actually get these things done for the environment is also the same technology that because of this technology, or because of the way this technology is made, it's hurting the environment, and people are getting killed behind it as well. So it's
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying it's a double-edged sword that's happening. Like, we have to, and that's why I want to do this topic. And I'm asking the questions the way I'm asking them, because we have to come up with realistic answers about this, because, you know, we ourselves, we always are talking about the environment, but realistic actions and things need to be taken on all of our ends. Of course, you know, try to clean up, pick up trash as much as possible, do the things that I can do within my reach. But on a bigger scale, we all need to be making sure that we are taking care of the environment, but doing tangible things that can actually help the environment get better.
I mean, even look at the pictures of the strike. All you see is a bunch of wasted resources. Everybody's got a paper sign.
Right. I saw that.
Everybody's got think about all of the resource, and then think about how much of that is just going to be thrown away. And then, also get into it, like when we talk about recycling, everything isn't recyclable, and things can only be recycled so many times before it just becomes waste. So even if you're using recycled paper to make these signs, how do you know that you can recycle it again? How do you know that it hasn't been degraded to such a point that you using it for this purpose just created more trash, more waste? You know what I'm saying?
Now I'm with you because I'm like I say I'm looking at pictures now and I see a lot of paper signs and all these things here and the you know the posters and all these different elaborate creative things that people have put together to mock officials and all these things and big sheets and all this stuff. So how much of this is recyclable? Because you know in a realistic action like. We're not telling people not to gather in mass and do things like this. Like gather in mass and do things like this, but just have we need to have realistic, tangible goals in mind when we do things like this because this can be used like so greatly. Let's say have an actual plan in place and doing certain things, and you want to get something done, put these people on, sick the people on. But it has to be done correctly because like this with. And we want the young people to do it, but like you said, walking out of school and going to do this ain't gonna really bust no grapes.
Here's why I put so much emphasis on not missing school. And I don't know how else to say this. But young people
go ahead, Gramps.
God you know damn. They are. They ain't hardly learning shit anyways in school. The little bit that they are learning, they don't need to miss. You need to have your little ass in school. That's part of the reason why the protests are seemingly empty stances that lead to nothingness is because y'all don't know how to critically think about the problem.
Well, I mean, who are they learning from? Learning from dumbass adults who don't know how to critically think about the problem as well. Like, that's why I asked it the way I asked. Like, have and when I say we, of course, you know, I'm really not talking about me and you, but I am, but I'm not, but I am, but I'm not. But we as adults, have we really set bad examples for the next generation to continue to do things that we know are ineffective, but it make us feel good to do?
But the problem is what you said. We don't know that these things are ineffective. Because we're still doing them as adults. We think they work.
I mean, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, strikes in certain situations, in certain instances, when organized correctly and can be leveraged correctly, they do work.
Right.
They do work. But this type of strike, because it's like, who you striking against?
Right.
And what pressure is going to be felt on whoever you striking against? Like, you striking against the climate, you striking against the people who. Killing the climate, because the people who are killing the climate, this didn't scare them. Like, if I wouldn't have went on Twitter, I wouldn't have known this was happening. But guess what? The trash still in my neighborhood, in the hoods that I've been driving around in the city, because half the people I know, or most people I know around, don't even know the climate strike happened.
I mean, they had a little woo-ha up here in Charlotte, but this is where I say kids are so... Kids are so naive, and it's not their fault. They haven't been here that long. They'll meet with a politician who will sell them a false bill of hope, and they'll think they actually did something. You know, they're not really creating no pressure because they don't know who to put pressure on. They don't understand the components of pressure. And that's not all kids, but that's the majority of them because the majority of adults don't understand. They don't. So they really don't know what they're supposed to be doing with the strike. That's why they just keep striking. That's why they just, and it's not even a strike. They're skipping school. They just keep skipping school. And a lot of the kids, I'm sure there are kids out there that are skipping school because they just don't want to be in school. I'm sure there are a lot of kids out there that honestly think they're making a difference. But there aren't a lot of kids out there that are critically thinking about what we're doing with this thing. They're just trying to go from one protest to the next, and they're hoping that they can galvanize enough support, enough fanfare, that they can be seated in front of somebody of power, because this goes back to that getting a seat at the table conversation. If I can just get a seat at the table, if I could just get somebody to talk to me, somebody to listen to me, things have changed.
Nobody things ain't changed like that, though.
Right. It don't work like that.
Like, I mean, that's the reality of it. We've been able to see enough. We ain't seen it all, but we've been able to see enough that's not that's That can work when you have other systems in place that are actually working for you and that can actually put some pressure on people. People have to be scared of you.
Right.
People have to understand that if they fuck with you, then they have something to lose. And as of right now, they don't give a that. What do people have to lose by the kids doing this?
Nothing.
Like the people who burn down the Amazon, how does this stop them from burning down the Amazon?
Look, and the crazy part is kids do have power. They just don't have political power.
They don't have the right type of power. They don't have the type of power that can actually really move things around in this real world.
But here's the deal, though. They just need to be more creative. A kid can't duplicate what an adult does and get the same result because there are things missing. Kids have to be, it's similar to, you know, when you think back to Prohibition, white women were able to get alcohol outlawed, and they didn't have the right to vote. They didn't have the power to be politically active. But they did have power in their households and in their community. And they leveraged that power to create political action that was desirable to them. Kids don't have political power, but they do have social and cultural power. They need to learn how to leverage that power to get things done. Unfortunately, you can't use the tools of adults to leverage social and cultural power. You have to use different means. And as a kid, you got to go about the process in a totally different way in order to create that pressure. But the goal for you is not to get a seat at the table because you're a kid. Nobody's going to listen just because you're a kid. The goal for you has to be able to create so much social and cultural pressure on the system, corporate and political, that their will changes. One thing that we all have power over here in America anyways is spending power. Kids can tell their moms and their dads that we don't want this brand of phone. You can stop using this form of social media. You can stop doing these things. Like, you can use the leverage you have as teenagers and young adults and the way that they're showing that they can move en masse, because these strikes are happening all over the globe. So we know that they can move en masse. Move en masse in ways that's going to create extreme pressure on the corporate organizations and the political structures to get the things you want. And most of these are white kids. They should be more centered around the tunes and the tenets of boycotting organizations than striking or skipping school, if that makes sense.
What was I just about to say? With these kids, they can... Damn, what was I just about to say? Because when we're talking about leveraging that power, leveraging what they can, the power that they do have, because they don't have to buy certain things. What was I about to say? I forgot. But these kids do have some power. They just have to learn how to use the power that they have. Oh, I was gonna say, they can. They need to study the LGBTQ community and see how they rose to power so quickly. Because think about it, they don't fuck with the LGBTQ community. Most people would not say a word about the community. Why could they get their heads taken off? So, the young folk can study, as far as when you talk about gaining some kind of political power and social power, be able to study that group.
I mean, they need to study somebody, but they can't. Marches and protests, rallies, things like that, they are great for galvanizing large quantities of people and creating a sense of kinship and camaraderie. But they don't create change by themselves. They create energy that can be used to create change. But with a lot of these things have been going on for years. And the energy is being used to create more rallies and marches instead of creating real change. And so at that point, I begin to be like, okay, so now not only are you skipping school, And becoming dumber, putting your teachers, your school, and your community in a potential bind. Because here's the thing also, school funding is tied to the grades the kids get on these tests. And teachers already feel an immense amount of pressure to get kids passing. They already feel like the kids are coming into school too far behind. There's too much work to do. They don't have enough time, resources, supplies to do what they need to do to get these kids to the level that they're supposed to be at. The last thing they need is, I know here in Charlotte, talking to one kid, he was like, he wished that they would, they need to organize a protest every week. The last thing that they need is for students to be missing 6, 7, 8 days out of the semester going on a protest and then coming to school, and the teachers are having to try to cram in all of that missed time so that they can get them to the level they need to get them at so that they can pass these tests so that the schools can keep getting funded. So that, you know, like everything just, it's like a snowball effect. When students miss school, the only people that it hurts is the students and the communities that they live in.
Now I get you. Now I get you. It needs to be better. Kids, keep doing your thing, but...
Oh, definitely.
But also, just know y'all learned that from us and future generations who keep passing shit on to y'all that don't work. So it ain't y'all fault. It's our fault and future generations above, because keep passing dumb shit on.
Right.
But, all right, so, you know, that's how, those are our thoughts on the climate strike. But we do recommend people to keep abreast on what's going on with the climate strike and jump in to help where you can. And, you know, be friendly to the environment around you.
And I want to say this before we move on.
Go
I'm
ahead.
I'm with you, Joe. We definitely support kids being socially and culturally and politically active. You know, it's a beautiful sight to see young people that give a damn. We want them to be effective as well. So, yeah. You know, that's all I got to say on that. You being active but ineffective, that pains me. Especially all of the black kids getting caught up.
Yeah, it's a waste of time and energy. We don't want these young people to get discouraged or think that their activism doesn't work.
Right. Right.
So. All right, so our next topic, you know, we're talking about the segment in the Revolt Conference where you had a panel led by Cousin Jeff. Cousin Jeff. You remember him from BET?
Nope.
Oh, but you weren't cool in high school. Ooh. There you go. But on the panel was T.I., Candace Owens, Killer Mike, Katrina Pearson, Tamika Mallory, and Stephen Pargett. Doing the trap, it was the Trap the Vote panel. And this was probably the highlight of the Revolt Summit. And it was interesting, aggravating. I'm just using them two words, interesting and aggravating at the same time. I did watch some of it. So. I'm not familiar with everybody on that. I'm familiar with Killer Mike, familiar with Candace, familiar with T.I. I'm familiar with Tamika Mallory's name, but I'm not familiar with her work. The other lady, Katrina Pearson, I don't really know her. I don't know who Steve Pargett is. So, apparently, Steve Pargett was like the neutral person. You know, Killer Mike down with Bernie Sanders, but he also down with black people building their own. So I don't see how them two go together. T.I., Democrat, Candace Owens, Pearson are Republicans, and Mallory, Democrat. And it was a waste of time. Because there was a lot of back and forth. Killer Mike said a lot of good things. Candace Owens said a lot of truthful things. Even though I know she's gonna get ate up for just being who she is. And she ain't that bright, but she fine. She pretty though, I'll say that. But the other dude, the light skinned dude, what was his name again? Stephen Parkett. Yeah, he was just there. So I guess the highlight of it was T.I. and Candace Owens going at it. Have you seen those clips?
I've read about them. I didn't watch them.
Okay, but you know, read about them. So you're familiar with, they're talking about when America was great, and he was like, well, when America was great and all that. And like, well, you said you started with some bullshit. Yeah. So Killer Mike broke that up, talking about, you know, basically saying some of the same things we've been saying. Y'all over here arguing over who got the best master, whether it's Republican or Democrat. Because one of the more aggravating things that Candace Owens always does is bring everything back, every fight back to, basically the reason why black people messed up is because of Democrats. And, like, we know better than that. Like, she's a smart girl. She knows some stuff, but she be saying some dumbass shit. So she's a dumbass person who sometimes says some smart shit. Tamika Mallory was more so agreeing with, her T.I. more so on the same page. The other lady, what's her name? Pearson. Pearson was trying to back up, you know, Candace Owens' Republican views. it was a waste of time, because first of all, my thing is, if we're talking about a black agenda, we shouldn't be talking about it on the stage in front of people and film it and then put it out to the world. And a damn show shouldn't be led by two rappers and a whole bunch of other people that we don't really know what they do for a living. No, and it should be moderated by Cousin Jeff. Like, if we're really serious about creating a black agenda, so I understand there's more so conversation than anything, but it's conversation that we keep feeling that we need to have, and we don't even really need to have these types of conversations, especially not in public. Because these conversations are pointless. These conversations are yelling matches back and forth. These conversations are not people who are coming to a table where they agree on certain points or not. Because the thing is, bring your facts, not what you feel, and let's really put things on the table. Because Candace Owens was saying some truthful shit, and people didn't want to hear what she was saying because of who she is. But with that type of mindset and those type of attitudes, if we're really trying to put something on the table for black people to unify us in some way, then we have to be able to put our egos to the side, put our hatred to the side, but also come to the proverbial table organized and ready, because we've done our research, we got our numbers, we got our facts, we've tried and true some of these things, we tested some of this stuff, and we know what worked and we know what don't work. So we've come together to sift through these things that we know what worked and what don't work, get the best ones and move forward with it, whether you agree wholeheartedly with everything everybody do or not. And these types of forms are nothing but grandstanding forms for people to bloviate, basically. What you think?
In regards to these panels?
Yeah, these panels and some of the things that you read that it was talking about.
Honestly, one of the reasons I didn't watch this panel is because there were no historians, scholars, people that spend their life and whose job it is to study this shit. I didn't see any of them up there. And so I viewed it as another, and I'm not saying that celebrities and other people shouldn't have a voice. I mean, Tamika Mallory has been an activist for essentially all of her life.
So she has a place.
Yeah, she definitely has a place up there.
So she'd be the most qualified up there.
Yeah, but even to that, I don't know. I know she spent a good chunk of her life with the Now Action Network, and I know she spent a good chunk of time after she left working with the Women's March. And I think, because I got put on to her when she was in the Time Magazine's top 100 list. I think that was 2 years ago, for putting together the Women's March in 2017. And, you know, we all know she recently left the Women's March organization. She took some heat about attending the event for Farrakhan.
Yeah.
But so I think there are places for activists, especially those activists who are serious about their activism, because you can't be serious about your activism and be ignorant to history. A serious activist is somebody that studies history. And so there's a place for them, because they have that understanding of how do we translate what we know into what we can do to make a difference in the world today. So I look at Tamika Mallory, and I know who she is, and I know what she's done, and I think there's a place for her up there. People like Akilah Michael or T.I., who, you know, they have looked, and T.I. is real iffy for me, because he's on some shit.
T.I. shouldn't be up there. T.I., Killer Mike is more qualified, because Killer Mike is more educated about a lot of this stuff in history than T.I. is. T.I. just up there because of the shit he be saying on social media.
But here's the deal, though. Like, even Killer Mike has, I think Killer Mike knows some stuff, but even Killer Mike has shown a level of naivety and ignorance in terms of his ability to be manipulated. I mean,
you ain't let me finish. but that's real though, because I'm conflicted about, because in this talk, in this panel discussion, when he was going off on this tangent about them arguing over who has the best master, that he was also talking about black people need to build our own. We need to do our own thing. Black people need to be thinking about being self-sufficient, all these things here. And black, we need to be able to do this. So two things always pop in my head when I hear, one of the things that always pop in my head is when he's talking about we need to be able to hunt, fish, fight, and all these different things here. And it's like, I agree with that. But I'm really not in the best position to tell people certain things, because I'm not in the shape. And some of those things I can't do. So that's one thing I'm looking at him is like, you know, I know you're telling people they need to be able to hunt and fish and do all this, do it, but can you really do it too? And sustain it?
With your physical condition? I don't know if he'd be able
Not throwing to no shots, him. Not trying to be shady, not trying to be no little bitch, but
that's
just...
That's real, though, because if we're talking about survival, if you're talking to people about survival,
right,
you got to be able to survive.
And you're not in the best physical condition to survive.
Right. So, you know, that's real. I mean, and when you look at, like, I looked at pictures of the panels, that becomes painfully obvious that Killer Mike is a big boy. And that ain't taking no shots to say that big people can't be in shape. We know that big people can be in shape.
He ain't the big dude that's in shape, though. Yeah, he's just not the big dude that's in shape like that. In that documentary, he got tired walking down the block. Not throwing no shots, no shades. It's just a fact. He got tired walking down the block.
But I just get tired of the black community looking to celebrities instead of looking to the people that actually study this shit and the people that are actually out there trying to make this shit happen and live this shit. Just because a motherfucker got money doesn't mean that they're smart. It doesn't mean that they're well informed. It just means that they have money. That's it. And so,
well, see, that's why, you know, there was a video that I got finished watching on YouTube that the buddy put out. It was like, you know, going back to what Malcolm was saying, it's like entertainers and athletes and things like that aren't leaders. No, they are what they are. No. So, you know, we know we've had outliers and exceptions throughout history. His face is in my head right now. Not Ozzie Davis. He had The Voice. He had that the black guy early 1900s with The Voice. Not Ozzie Davis. Come on, help me out, Pat. He's an activist, an actor. Paul Robeson. Yeah, Paul Robeson. No, Paul Robeson did some good things. Sidney Poitier did some good things. But it's like, they, most of their time was dedicated to their craft of acting. Activists dedicate their time to the craft of activism. And organizers dedicate their time to the craft of organizing. So these should be the people that's at the critical positions of these things that are making things, that are making stuff happen. Like, if you really go back and study the 60s and 70s and the civil rights movements and things, that's what was happening. Those people who were the best at those positions were doing that. And, yeah, you might not know their names and all these things, and I know a lot of people want to be famous, but it was the people who knew how to organize and knew how to get people mobilized and all those things, knew how to do activism. Those were the people who were at those critical positions to make sure that the Montgomery bus boycott happened the way it happened, successful. You know what I'm saying? So those are things that's missing.
That's the nefariousness, or that's the part with me that has me looking at all of these things and wondering, like, what is, because even with these well-meaning celebrities, this stage, this summit is getting millions and millions of people are watching and paying attention to this summit.
Yeah.
They should black have. People too. If they really wanted to benefit the community, that stage should have been filled with activists doing real shit. That way millions and millions of people could be exposed to real activists, how they think, how they go about it. By robbing these opportunities from people who are doing this work to actually get some light, because everybody up on that stage has the capability of shining light on somebody doing real work and creating real change in the community just by using their platform to put light on these people. Instead, they use their platforms to do shit like this, garner more fame, more publicity for themselves.
Well, my other point about Killer Mike, too, was I hear what he say, but then I see a lot of the things that he do, and a lot of stuff don't add up, because in this he was talking about he learned from Asa Hill. You know, he spent time with Farrakhan and all these other people, and I know he got access to a lot of people that I don't have access to. But a lot of his actions don't line up, so you want black people to be self-sufficient, but you support Bernie Sanders and his political run for president. Now, how do those two line up? Like, what does Bernie Sanders got to do with black liberation? Will black people get what we need to get with black self-sufficiency? Like, if it's like that, shouldn't we be encouraging black people to do just that instead of encouraging black people to just waste time trying to get Bernie Sanders elected?
But there are always going to be major contradictions when your leaders are celebrities, because celebrities, they don't, this is not what they do. They're caught up in the passion and all of that, and they might have the best of intentions, but at the end of the day, the 60s and 70s movements were prominent and powerful because the celebrities played, for a lot of reasons, but I think one of the reasons was because the celebrities fulfilled their role. Their role was to bankroll the operation, to provide access to resources that the activists would not have had otherwise. And in this space, having a platform that can gain somebody, that can get somebody in front of millions and millions of people, that is a tremendous resource that there are thousands of nonprofits and organizations all across the country that could change their local areas dramatically with access to 1 million people, 2 million people, 3 million people. So I'm looking at all of this, and I'm just, once again, celebrities are doing what they do. They're trying to step in roles that they shouldn't be in, and this is something that the black community, we really got to get a handle on this celebrity worship, because, like, I'll say it again, just because somebody is famous doesn't mean that they're smart. It doesn't mean that they're well-informed. It doesn't mean that they're well-read.
It doesn't mean that they can do everything that they're doing. That they're not supposed to be great at everything. Nobody's great at everything just because you're on TV. But activism should be left to activists. Organizing should be left to organizers. You know, mobilization should be left to mobilizers. Like, they're people who...
Like, this should be left to academic scholars and people that study the shit.
Well, it's kind of also like that ADOS thing, though, because it's, like I was telling you earlier, you know, you got Jay Morrison and Boyce Watkins debating about it. Then you got Yvette Cornell and all these other people who are talking about the ADOS this and ADOS that. And it's like, a lot of the stuff that they have going on with that is it's people buying into some of the rhetoric of it, because some of the rhetoric is on point, some of it ain't, but all the just the egos involved is making it worse than what it is. That's what black people don't realize, is we mess ourselves up with the dumb shit that we be doing, because we may have a great idea, but just some dumbass people trying to execute the idea because they can't get past their egos, and if somebody disagree with them, then it's all out war.
That's what happens when you, I mean, you, like, even to that, why have somebody like Candace Owens on here? I understand you want to represent a variety of viewpoints, but Candace Owens don't even believe half the shit she's been saying, and that's been proven by the fact that you can go back to before she became a conservative political pundit. She was very much anti-Trump, spewing a totally different message. So why isn't anybody doing research to see that this is a black woman who is intelligent enough to figure out that if she changes her direction, she could be one of the only black people in that space that she could capitalize off? Why are you supporting somebody like that instead of supporting somebody that genuinely holds these views? Why isn't there a scholar on this panel who, when she starts talking about, because I know her talking points, when she starts talking about the single parent rate in the black community, yeah, there should be a scholar there that should be able to say, first off, you're misinterpreting facts and you're drawing conclusions that aren't there. The single parent household rate speaks to the fact of whether or not a mother is married or not. It doesn't speak to whether or not there is a man present in the house. The fact that it's risen in the black community is also indicative of a rise in American communities, period, American culture, period. And the fact that there haven't been any solidified real studies that could differentiate a lot of those correlative factors that we bring up. So we know that a child growing up in a household without a father is more likely to experience poverty and incarceration. But that's correlative. We don't know what the cause of that is. Maybe kids that grow up in a household without a father are more likely to be experiencing poverty and are more likely to be experiencing some of these other things, and therefore those things directly relate to what's happening. Maybe it's not the father at all. It's the lack of resources for black women.
Yeah, because she's saying that that's the biggest issue in black America is the single parent.
Because that's a white, right-wing, conservative political talking point. If we get more black men in the house, that'll solve the problem. But it doesn't solve the problem, because we know that when you compare two-parent household black kids to two-parent household other kids, you still see elevated rates of poverty. You still see elevated rates of incarceration. You still see elevated rates of everything else. So that means that, yes, there's a correlative pattern here of the what happens when you take a father out of the home, but it's not causal. So we need to be talking about fixing some of these causal problems, and you can't do that if you want to harp in on a political talking point instead of diving down deep. But I guarantee you nobody in this panel challenged her on the points and in the ways that I just mentioned when she brought up single-parent households.
Well, not like that. They didn't have the time, or I don't think they was as researched on that. Some people, it was some pushback on certain points, but it was more so still Democrat-Republican things, because, you know, that's one of our main arguments, too, is Democrats fucked up everything. Because it was about like an hour panel.
Yeah, it was an hour-long event sponsored by AT&T, and they had television time slots they had to fill. That's not what we need.
You know, Revolt. Shout out to Revolt and Diddy, right?
Yeah. We need more shit like the Freedom Train podcast. If Joe and I want to talk for 3 hours because we feel like it's warranted, we'll talk for 3 fucking hours.
We can.
That's what
guess
we
why?
Need.
Well, Diddy do own Revolt, but he don't own all the television stuff, so.
Right, he got sponsors, he got network restrictions, he's got a lot of restrictions he's got to face. So even if he is owning the broadcast station or the content creation aspect of it, he's still got to live up to a lot of restrictions. And shout out, I'm not attacking Diddy or Revolt. I'm not even attacking the people on this panel. What I'm attacking is the consistent thought process that keeps us in these spaces where we have celebrities. Because at this point, Candace Owens is a celebrity. We have celebrities standing up in front of us trying to talk to us about cultural and social issues instead of having the people that do this shit and study this shit as a form of living, as a form of how they eat. Like, that's what I'm attacking right now. It's not these people. I had number love for all of the people up here, even Candace Owens, whom I disagree with. But this didn't do the community any good.
Nah, it was a waste of time. It was a pure waste of time. Like I said, it took me about 5 or 6, maybe 7 to 10 times to actually sit down and really watch it and really get myself to watch it and pay attention to it, because I thought it was just that, you know, a waste of time, just a bunch of people up there bloviating. Now, a couple good points was made, but all right, now what? You know what I'm saying? So, and then, you know,
you're gonna make a couple good points.
And then, we're gonna do this in front of everybody.
Well, that's the other issue with it, and I'm super glad you brought that up. You don't do shit like this in front of the whole fucking world.
Because bringing Candace Owens and the other lady on, you knew it was gonna be some disagreement, especially with Candace Owens.
Exactly. And that's, you don't do shit like this in front of the whole world.
But another thing I do want to say to people, and being fair to Candace Owens, is listen to what the fuck she's saying. And if you disagree based off of information, cool. But if you just disagree based off of emotion, stop doing that shit. Like, the lady's not 100% false on some of the things that she says, but she ain't 80% right either. So, you know what I'm saying? But listen to her and don't get your emotions caught up in it, because some of the stuff she's saying actually make fucking sense.
I mean, you know, we talk about this all the time. I listen to everybody. I even listen to David Duke and some white nationalists. I listen to everybody because there's a kernel of truth in everything. You know, there's always some truth there. And even if there isn't, there's still something to be understood about a perspective that a person has that can be beneficial for you later. But you gotta make yourself available to experience those things in order to gain that. Candace Owens, I think she's a blowhard. I think she's foolish, but I also think she's intelligent. You know, and I also think that she does bring things to the table, discussion points to the table that black people have kind of gotten away from talking about. Now, I disagree with the way she presents them and how she frames them, but I do agree that there are certain things that we used to talk about all the time that we no longer talk about because everybody's so goddamn sensitive.
Yeah. So, no, I agree. But we need to move on. But it's just, like we've said a million times, this shit was a waste of time, and they shouldn't have done this. Like, stop doing shit like this. Because it really has no value. It's really not helping our community move forward. It's really not helping stuff get better. It's causing rifts between people further, and it's pointless. So stop doing shit like this. All right. So our last topic is: will millennials, with the ushers and we's, will we end racism in America? So when you hear if I just walked up to you on the street, Pat. I just walked up to you on the street, and I asked you that question: do you think millennials will end racism? What would be your answer, and why?
No. No, because millennials, first off, they're too sensitive to have the conversations they need to have. They're too self-righteous to listen to the conversations that they need to listen to. And they're too lazy to do what needs to be done.
But my question for this millennials will end racism is, Will white millennials be willing to give up power and control, i.e., redistribution or an accurate redistribution of money and power in America that black people are one owed and other people as well? Are white millennials willing to do that?
No.
Because I mean, if we ain't talking about that on that level, then we ain't talking about nothing.
I mean, this NPR article that I shared, because I told you, the NPR article, they ran a story yesterday on white liberals adopting a more progressive position on race. And it wasn't a long story. It was a very brief snippet, like 5, maybe 10 minutes. But they were basing all of their statements off of 20% of white liberals holding certain views. 20%. Not 50, not 60, not 70, not 40, 20%. So on the whole, are white liberals more sensitive about race than their parents are? Yeah, social media has done that amount of good, where now white people can't sit in their box and believe and just not believe black people when they say shit, because there's video evidence of it. But
yeah.
Does that translate into an actual understanding of what's needed in order to change things? No, it doesn't. We just finished talking about that with climate change.
Yeah, but right, like that's a whole nother thing too. Is that the destroying of the environment is a part of this white supremacy racism as well, because it's about the total domination and subjugation of everything, even if it leads to depletion, right? So to not be racist means to give up everything. It's not. It's more than just a few people challenging shit. It's all white millennials saying, fuck this racism shit. This is not happening. And this is how we will redistribute power moving forward. And if that conversation ain't being had or those actions are not happening, then we ain't talking about nothing really, are we? To talk about to end racism, because to end racism means to give up power means to let go of the concept of superiority versus inferiority. It means to end the concept of race as in itself. It's like Neely Fuller told us, you know, race in it, the concept of race in itself is racist. It means to make sure that black people are adequately compensated. Black people in America who are descendants of slaves in America are adequately compensated for what happened. It means to no longer have like old rich white men control like more than 90% of the wealth in this country. It means for like groups like the Ku Klux Klan to stop existing, neo-Nazis and all the other white racist groups. And so how do you take somebody like what's that white boy? What's that Richard? What's that white boy? Richard, the white nationalist white boy.
I can't remember his name, but I think I know who you're talking about.
But the one who told Charles Barkley he ain't like him to his face, and Charles was surprised. He talked to him like, well, anyway. But how do you take extremists and change their ideas as well? Because just being in a certain age group doesn't mean that when you go home, these ideas and things aren't drilled into you. Because if you're still coming from racist people. Not saying you have to be racist because your parents are racist, but those ideologies are, especially if you're in a real racist home, those ideologies are being reinforced in your head. And yes, you may go out into a society where racism is bad to practice, but you just learn how to practice it behind closed doors, which has been happening, you know, on the Democrat side.
I mean, I think we're going to be in this space until, because to be honest, white people still, from my experiences and my exposure, they still in mass don't know what racism is. You know, they still in
right.
mass don't know what racist, being a racist really means. Like, they think, as long as I don't say that I won't date black girls, I'm not a racist. You know, like, they think that you know, they think that as long as I don't do this negative thing or I don't say this negative word, or I've never used the word nigger in my life, I'm not a racist. Like, they,
yeah.
You got white people saying dumb shit like that.
So, right, yeah. That doesn't, like, racism is a system. It's a team sport. It's a system. And it's not just going to be wiped out by white people just saying, you know what? I woke up this morning, I don't want to be racist anymore. Like, how do you plan on breaking up the system and making sure that people are old, making sure people are taken care of? How do you end hateful, terroristic ideologies? Because racists, real racists are not going to go down without a fight.
They're not. And you see that in the school systems nowadays, where more and more predominantly white communities are seeking to get permission to start their own school systems because they don't want to be affiliated with the school systems in large metropolitan areas that are primarily black. You see that in white flight all over the place, not just in terms of schools, but also in terms of neighborhoods and living environments. You see it everywhere. You see it on TV. I was going to the Y the other day, this past week, to help out with a program. And as I was walking into this Y, mind you, this is a black community Y, YMCA. I've never even seen a white person in there, with the exception of maybe one or two dropping their adopted black kids off for a program. But outside the Y, what'd you say?
So amazing.
but outside of the Y, they had this picture up talking about community engagement and making people happy. And on the photo was a picture of nothing but white people smiling with all of these captions about hard work, community involvement, this, that, and the third. And I was thinking to myself, I bet these people don't even realize the type of message they're sending to these kids who walk by this poster, this big poster in the front yard of the Y every single day for 8 to 10 weeks. What kind of message do you think they're going to associate with that? Oh, well, white people are hard workers. They're in the community. They're happy. They're this, they're that. So, you know, that level of sophistication in terms of thinking and analyzing just the environment, that's not happening in white communities. So how do you change a white person from being essentially a white American?
Yeah, but, yeah, like, how do you, like, you have to give up a lot to end racism. Like, you have to give up a lot because you've taken so much to be racist. You've taken so much to be in the position of the supreme group of people on earth. I hear a lot of black people talking about they don't like the word white supremacy because white people ain't supreme. Yes, the fuck they are. You're not supreme. Who are?
You know, Joe, we have these conversations all the time. I mean, how do you... It's like taking an animal that breathes air, throwing it into the ocean, and then having it converse with the animals that breathe, that can breathe in the water, that have gills. And it's trying to explain to them the advantage they have by having gills. And they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. You can breathe oxygen just like I can. Right, but I got to go to the surface to do it. You can swim around down here. You can go deep. You can stay in the water. You ain't worried about drowning in this environment. Like, I could potentially die just from living here. Man, that's foolishness. How could you die from living here? From the water. I could drown. Bullshit, man. What even is drowning? I don't even know what you're talking about right now. Like, these are the conversations we having with these people. Like, and they're just not going to understand. So there are some that will, but I don't feel like it's our purpose. But how do you change it? That starts with exposure. You know, that starts with the education system and getting these people to learn about other people's histories and have other people's histories represented in the textbook, in the lesson plans, even if those people aren't represented in the classroom. And that's not going to happen.
But like you said, though, it's more than just, okay, I have black friends, or I'm tolerant of black people, or I'm more culturally competent. It's like, are you treating black people like a fucking, like fucking human beings? Do you think that you're superior to black people? Do you think that black people are a slave class? All these, you know, all these racist ideologies that have been passed down. But also, ultimately, it goes back to, all right, so let's get real, though. We see how you feel, but let's see your actions, and let's redistribute this wealth. How about that? Let's do this. Let's chop this thing up. Make sure it's just not white people on top, and make it even for everybody to be on top.
But I mean,
until we do that, we ain't serious about ending racism.
Right.
And that's really all I got to say about this.
Because I mean, when you think about it, like I'm looking at this Pew Research report on race and relations that came out earlier this year, and one of the interesting things I saw was 20% of black people, that's 1 in 5, felt like all or most white people were prejudiced against black people in the United States. 10% or 1 in 10, so roughly half, felt like all black people were prejudiced against white people in the United States. Now, the flip to that is 6% of white people felt like all white people were prejudiced against black people in the United States. And 14% of white people felt like all or most black people are prejudiced against white people in the United States. So you're talking about a dynamic where, and you know, you go down the list, outside of the black community, every other community that they polled felt like more that black people were more racist against white people than white people were racist against black people. And you
yeah.
said, like, you can dissect that so many different ways in terms of cultural power, norms, presentations,
so,
prejudices. You know, like, there's
so
many different things
right.
to do with that.
But in reality, though, the people who mean well, how do you get those people to change? Like, the people who really believe that their white nationalism or their white space in America is in jeopardy, how do you get them to change?
You can't. I'm a firm believer. All you can do is present the information. People are going to make whatever decision they want to make. By the time a motherfucker's 30, 40, 50 years old, I don't believe you can do anything to change that person. They are who they are. Now, somebody that's 6, 7, 8 years old, 9, 10 years old, you can make a world of difference in their lives, but you also got to understand, you know, and I know you do. I know you're just asking the questions, but I know you understand all this. People need to understand that it's bigger than just what these kids are learning at home. We have a society filled with institutions and cultural practices that inculcate, that instill the belief in black inferiority. Even if it's not white superiority, there's a belief in black inferiority. And that is spread down even to black people who don't
yeah,
believe
yeah, it has. We've adopted it. We've adopted that idea and concept of us being inferior to white people. That's why we go around telling our kids. And I was thinking about this earlier this morning. I was washing clothes. Like, we go around telling black people that they have to work twice as hard to make it. Stop telling black people that. Start telling people that. Racism exists, and there will be obstacles in your way, but your ass got to be crafty enough to get past these obstacles. You don't have to work twice as hard. It's just understand racism exists, and racism going to be a lot of reasons why you might face a lot of these obstacles, as long as you ain't out here doing Antonio Brown and yourself. So.
Yeah, but, you know, we also got to face the fact that these obstacles continue to exist because we're not doing things so that the person coming up behind us can get around them. We're trying to navigate the obstacles ourselves and leaving the next motherfucker to their own devices. If we live by the code of creating for ourselves, then in 3-4 generations, the obstacles present in the white community could be completely eliminated from ours. That doesn't mean we'd be enjoying levels of success in terms of financial or economic achievements equal to that of white people, but that does mean that we would be in control of our own spaces, our own environments. We would be safer, we would be happier, and we would be living longer because we wouldn't have to deal with racism to the capacity and on the level.
Well, we wouldn't have to have reparations hearings and things like that.
Right.
And we're really talking about, but also we're talking about the millennials challenging the white people who really empowered as well.
And they're not going to do that, because you know what happens when a well-meaning white person gets in power? They become like all of the other white people in power. And that's one thing I wish people would pay more attention to. That's something I pointed out to somebody in the Great Hat, talking about, and I'm going to go back to that documentary because I know a lot of people haven't read or listened to the Mueller Report, even though it's free. And the Great Hack is like a documentary form of that. But I'll say this, that white girl that set all this shit up for Cambridge Analytica, she volunteered during the Obama administration. She worked in the Clinton campaign. She was a liberal, well-meaning white girl. And then she got mixed up in the conservative movement in those places of power. And for the next 10 years, she was a part of the good old boys club. All of that liberal shit that she thought she believed in as a teenager, all that shit went out the window when they offered her a seat at the table and threw some dollars at her. And the shit didn't really come crashing down until Cambridge Analytica and the Trump and the Brexit and all of that shit. When all of that shit started smoking up, I think her vision started clearing a little bit. And I'm not sure if her vision started clearing or if she saw that this shit was getting ready to end and she needed to try to find a way out. But the fact of the matter is, we have a bunch of examples of white people, well-meaning white people, getting in positions of power and doing great damage.
Yeah. So, you know, and to kind of put a bow on this, because I don't know, I said everything, but it's just like all you white millennials and millennials, period, well, no matter what your race, ethnicity is, if you're really serious about racism, I would say first start with, well, serious about ending racism, start with studying what racism and white supremacy truly is and how it affects especially people of color and how it enhances the life of white people and people who are time to time granted permission to dine at the table from afar, I guess I would say. But if we're really serious about ending racism, then we've got to have a serious conversation about changing the way America itself is structured and it exists. Point blank, period. Not saying you can't do it, you just got to be realistic, real about your shit. It's more than just talking. It's about taking real actions. So,
I'll say this to tie a bow around it for me. I'll end it with another statistic, and I'll probably do my show on this report. But listen, all you white people, you liberal whites who think that y'all are trying to prove that y'all are an ally to black people, y'all got a lot of work to do, and it ain't just going to be talking. Because according to this survey, 65% of black people believe that we will never achieve equality in America. 65% of black people, I say that again, believe that we will never achieve equality in America. 80% of white people do. So even the white folk that y'all ostracize believe that we'll achieve some level of equality. That in and of itself is another difference between black people and white people, just our perception of the future. Y'all got a lot of work to do, and y'all can't be self-righteous about doing it.
Right. Fuck all that shit. So, closing statement.
Power to the people.
Power to the people. Hey, get serious about making real change. And adults, be better adults and start making better examples for these young people to follow so they won't keep making the same mistakes we keep doing. And yeah. So I'm Joseph Ward. He's Patrick Irvin. This is the Freedom Train podcast series. And you've just been baptized in the knowledge that we possess for you too. In your life to reconstruct the way that we get in. But you know, how we do it, man. Every Wednesday, right here on the Freedom Train Network. Remember to tune in, www.freedomtrainradio.com. You contact us at freedom@freedomtrainnet on Twitter, Freedom Train Network, on Instagram and Facebook. Got the Freedom Train Network YouTube channel going down. Once again, the website, www.freedomtrainradio.com. We're on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Radio Public, iHeartRadio, everything. All the podcasting platforms that's out there, we out there. So you can catch us, Freedom Train Network. That's how we get down. So two fingers in the air like a player, because, you know, we just don't care. And we up out of here.